My grandmother always said it is impossible to pray too much, let's have another one. Dear God, use me tonight as an instrument of thy will. Speak through me so whatever results that you desire here tonight will be accomplished. In all things, thy will, not mine, be done, all to you and none of me. Amen. What I love most about Alcoholics Anonymous is the simplicity of it. There's a line in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that bottom lines for me the simplicity of AA. And what it says is simply this. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. The single most important fact in my life as I stand here tonight, and the only reason I'm standing here tonight, is that through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have established and grow in a relationship with a power greater than myself that I choose to call God, who does for me one day at a time what I could never do for myself. Left to my own devices, I would have destroyed myself years ago. I establish and grow in that relationship through living, not discussing, not analyzing, not theorizing about, but through living to the best of my ability, which is never perfect. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the reason that I pray before I tell you who I am. Because this is not about me. That prayer reminds me of two things that are vital and crucial to me staying here. First and foremost, the reason I'm in Atlanta tonight is to do God's will, not Kent's. And it also serves to remind me that he is in charge here tonight. And as always, thank God, I am not. Good evening, Atlanta. My name is Kent Coleman. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to, my parents raised a mannerable young man. I want to demonstrate that. If my mother was here, she'd get up and say, you ain't turn out like one. But anyway, I was raised right, and I want to demonstrate that. I want to thank the Atlanta Roundup Committee for the honor and the privilege of participating in this celebration of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is an honor and a privilege to participate in the life-giving, life-saving, life-changing fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at any level, whether it's setting up, cleaning up, shaking hands at the door, going into the jails and institutions, working one-on-one, knee-to-knee with newcomers, whatever it is. It is an honor and a privilege. How can you possibly outgive a fellowship that restores life to the living dead? No. So anytime I am asked to do something, Alcoholics Anonymous, I always say thank you, because you're allowing me to live in the solution rather than live in the problem. If selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem, then unselfishness and other-centeredness is the root of the solution. So I want to thank the Atlanta Roundup. I want to thank Tony and Karen for picking Janelle and I up at the airport, for the friendship and the fellowship, taking us out to eat tonight. One of the wonderful things about coming out and doing things like this is that you get to meet other people that you ordinarily wouldn't get to meet. And that's how fellowships and friendships begin. And you know, coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, wondering if I would ever have a friend, whether if I would ever really have fellowship, right? And then to be blessed to do things and to meet wonderful people like this. So I want to thank them. I want to thank, obviously, Janelle for coming with me down here and listening to this for the 1,000,000th time. Should I go down in the middle of this talk, she can come finish it, and it'll probably be a lot better than what you get from me. You know, we fly down here on an airplane, and I don't know too much about airplanes, but there's wind underneath the wings. I did go to school. I know that much. And Janelle is the wind beneath my wings, and she, and we just have a wonderful life together. And so I want to thank her for coming with me. My dry date is May 18th of 1992. It's been 30 years, and I'll tell you, this is the third fastest 30 years I've ever seen in my life. Man, time flies when you're having fun, right? And it is just when I was new, I heard a guy who got sober in 1942 speak at a meeting. Vic Z. Vic Z used to speak at meetings in Cleveland with his hands like this for an hour and never take them down. And I just tell you a quick thing, because these are people I learned from. Got to a meeting one night, and I think it was in Rocky River, which is a suburb of Cleveland, and he was speaking there, and there's all these cars in the parking lot, and I was running late. I drove from Sandusky, and I get out the car, and I see somebody picking up cigarette butts in the parking lot, and it was Vic Z. And he said to me, "Hey, Kent, you want to help me do this? You know, I want to make sure these people have a place to meet." These not in there like this, like I'm the speaker. See, the power of example is such a tremendous thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I learned that from such a humble man. But one of the things he used to say was, the only thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that time passes so quickly. And doesn't. Some of you in here know exactly what I'm talking about. That is the only sobriety date that I have. So if you're new here tonight, I'm here to share some with you. Relapse is not a part of this thing. Okay? I need you to understand that. Okay? And actually, most people here don't relapse. And I'll explain to you why that is. Guy came to a meeting at home right before COVID, and he stood up and he said, "My name is John Doe, and I have relapsed, and I'm back." And everybody clapped because we was glad John Doe wasn't dead. And after the meeting, I went up and talked to him, and I said, "Can I ask you a couple questions, John?" He said, "Sure, Kent." I said, "Do you have a sponsor?" He said, No. I said, "Have you read the book Alcoholics Anonymous and tried to apply the principles to your life a day at a time as best you can?" He said, No. I said, "Do you have a home group and a service commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous, John?" He said, No, I don't. I said, "John, can I ask you one more question?" He said, "Sure, Ken." I said, "What did you relapse from?" See, we're giving people the impression in here that showing up is recovery. Showing up is a big part of what we do in here. But it is not recovery. Recovery is a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It is getting involved in the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't want to stand up here and give you the impression that, listen, they told me when I came in here, sitting in a chicken coop don't make you no chicken. What did you relapse from? Obviously, fellowship is important. Obviously, all these things are important. But we know what the deal is, don't we? Right? I have a sponsor. His name is Bob. Bob knows he's my sponsor. I do not think he's too thrilled about it sometimes, but he knows he's my sponsor. If you're new in here, I want to share something with you. Having a sponsor is a wonderful thing. It really is. Being sponsorable is even better. People ask me all the time, "Ken, how many people do you sponsor?" My pat answer is, "Oh, about half of them." Right? You said that, right? Because it really is God is the truth, right? You know, sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is like everything else. You will get from it what you put into it, right? And so I work intensively with other alcoholics. Bob is my sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. I'm a member of the Venice Group. We're still looking for a place big enough to meet. It's a very big Friday night speaker meeting. The church gymnasium that we met in, which was packed on Friday nights, that church closed during COVID, and the building got sold. And so we are trying to find some place big enough to accommodate our group. So we're working on that. I have always been, that group was an Oxford group meeting. So I've been around for a while, and we're getting pretty antsy about getting the doors back open. Ain't the best group in the world, ain't the worst group in the world. It's just an AA group. One of the things that I've learned in here is it's okay to stop competing now. Prior to AA, my entire life was lived as better than, less than, or different than. And one of the things that I've learned about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it's okay just to be a member of. I don't have to be better than. I don't have, because what that does is it separates me from you. And separation kills guys like me. So I'm a member of a group. I have a sponsor. And I have a sobriety date. And I call those things, you know, the total package in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sponsorship, big book and step, home group and service. In my experience, which is the only thing I'm allowed to share from behind the podium, I have yet to meet an alcoholic of our type. And if you know what an alcoholic of our type is, read the book. I have yet to meet an alcoholic of our type who has come in here, taken those things and applied them to their life a day at a time to the best of their ability. Nobody does it perfect. God doesn't require perfection from me. God already knows I ain't going to be perfect. But just that I do the best that I can each day with what I have. And some days I do better than I do others. And I try to learn from those things, share those things with other people and become a better person. I have yet to see anybody come in here and do that and take a drink. I haven't seen it happen one single time. On the flip side of the coin, I have yet to see an alcoholic of our type come in here, ignore those things, and stay sane, sober, happy for any appreciable length of time. The simplicity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those who do get, and those who don't, and it's just that simple. I never sat in the bar room, watched somebody drinking across the bar, and thought I was going to get drunk watching them drink. That's just as ridiculous as me coming in here, watching you get a sponsor, get active, get in a group, and start giving back and helping people, and think that somehow magically it's going to rub off on me. Those who do get, and those who don't, and it's just that simple. I was born in the city of Sandusky, Ohio. I was the second of three boys. I was raised in a Christian home. I had as fine a mother and father that have ever graced this earth. I am the son of Pete and Evelyn Coleman. My father worked at General Motors. My mother worked at Chrysler. I'm retired from Ford. And I say about that is, you know, there's some craziness in the house, but we had really nice cars. Anyway, I had an older brother and a younger brother. We had everything we needed, most of the things that we wanted. We wore $100 tennis shoes in the early 1970s, 10 speeds, mini bikes, motorcycles. When I went off to college, I peeled the sticker out of the window of a brand new car and drove off to go to school. That's the kind of mom and daddy that I had. They worked their finger to the bone to see to it that we had everything that was denied them when they grew up, and they threw a little bit on top of that. It's the kind of mom and daddy that I had. My mother was the president of Ohio Baptist Women's Convention. A lot of famous people in religion, civil rights, some from down here in this area, were regular visitors to my home and friends of my mother. That is the atmosphere in which I was raised. Our grandparents lived with us, my mother's mother and father, my father's father. There was love and discipline in the house. We was taught the difference between right and wrong before our feet ever hit the grass in the front yard. I have not learned one thing in Alcoholics Anonymous insofar as spiritually principled living that I did not learn as a little boy. When I was a little boy in our house, they told us honesty is the best policy. A real man is always honest with himself and other people. In my house, maybe in your house, we got automatic butt whoopings when we got caught lying. Did that happen in anybody else's house in here? Welcome to step one. I learned the principle of step one is honesty. I learned it at the end of a hickory stick. I was 7 years old. My mother called me in the living room. She said, "Kenny, contrary to what you seem to believe, the sun does not rise when you wake up and set when you go to bed." She said, "Take a look out the window and tell me what you see." See, dogs, cats, cars, sky, grass, people. She said, "You think this just popped up out of nowhere? There's a power that's greater than you that created all this, and all you got to do is be willing to believe that." Step two. In our house, they told us if we would make a decision to turn our will and our lives, essentially our lives, over to the care of the power that created all this. In my house, they called that power God. They said, "You will always have what you need no matter what happens outside or around you." They was telling us the answer is inside, not outside. Step three. In our house, they told us anytime you got a problem, no matter how bad you think it is, come talk to us about it. A problem shared is a problem half solved. You're only as sick as your secrets. Anybody ever heard that before? Steps four and five. My mother used to say the biggest room in a human being's life is the room for improvement. There are no perfect people. And if you will ask that power that created all this to help you grow as into a better person, the power will always help you, step 6 and 7. In our house, they told us anytime you hurt, harm, or wrong somebody else, take a look at who you hurt, go make right the wrong you done. You owe money, pay it. You owe an apology, give it. You owe time, give it. Clean up your mess. That's what responsible people do. It's steps 8 and 9. My mother used to say you can never go forward in this life if you don't know where you are today and what you need to work on to get where you want to go. Life is about growth. Right? Step 10. When I was a little boy, you could walk through my house at night. You could walk through my house in the first thing in the morning, and you would see my grandparents on their knees beside their bed praying every single day. Step 11. And in our house, they told us the most important thing we could do with our lives was not acquire money and material things. It was to be of service to other people. We was taught to follow the golden rule. Talk to folk the way you want to be talked to. Treat folk the way you want to be treated. Step 12. When I got on the bus to go to kindergarten, I was already armed with a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that I recognized immediately when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in its 12 steps. So you're probably thinking to yourself, well, Kent, if you had all that, before you went off to kindergarten, what on earth are you doing speaking at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight? And I bet you know the answer to that too, don't you? I never did any of it. I talked about it a lot. Right? I'm the guy that would be in the bar room. I used to drink in a place called Brownlee's Tavern. And every night Friday night down to Brownlee's Tavern, somebody would have a meltdown. And it was always for the same reasons, because they was losing their job, getting divorced, or going to jail, right? And Kent would stagger over, drink in hand, and say something like this. Luke chapter 7, verses 11 to 19, I'm giving spiritual guidance down to Brownlee's Tavern. And I didn't stop there. I get marital advice down Brownlee's Tavern. I had never had a wife, but I didn't see how that mattered. With my life savings laying on the bar, I gave financial guidance down Brownlee's Tavern. My father called me a walking encyclopedia of perfectly useless information. Knowing is not enough. And it is so hard for an intellect-driven guy like me, even 30 years into this thing, I have to stay connected to you so that you can point that out to me, because I will do it in a heartbeat to this day. I'm a human being. My older brother was my hero. I come from a football family. And my father played at West Virginia State. My Uncle Bo went to Penn State. I had a cousin that was an All-American at the University of Michigan who played in the National Football League for 11 years. I had another cousin who was an All-American at the University of Kentucky. He played for the Kansas City Chiefs for 9 years. My family played football. It's what we was raised to do. Our baby pictures was not on a bearskin rug. They was in a three-point stance in diapers in the middle of the living room. My father took them pictures. And there's some people, like my brother was just one of them guys. He was 16 years old. He was 6'2". He weighed 215 pounds. He could run a 4.4 40 in tennis shoes on a cinder track. And when you like that, people come to your house. Bo Schembechler came to our house. Woody Hayes came to our house. And my brother was going to go to Michigan, and Woody Hayes came to our house, and my brother was going to go to Ohio State. That was the deal. We used to scrimmage the Massillon Tigers every year. a week before the season. This is before we had playoffs in Ohio. And my brother went down there and tore it up on that Saturday. And late in the scrimmage, guy hit him low. He fell funny. And hit his head, and he got up. And long story short, he walked to the sidelines and collapsed. He was not breathing. They took him to the hospital, and he had 9 hours of brain surgery on Monday, and he died that Wednesday. That is not what made me alcoholic. You stop any car on the street, talk to anybody, and hear people live, people die, tragedies happen. When I look back in inventory, and it's a crazy thing, I see it in Janelle. We love Ohio State football, and we go to games. And we was at Ohio State football game, and I was walking around, and, you know, there's 110,000 people. And, dude, y'all know down in the South. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Y'all know what I'm talking about, them Saturdays, don't you? Right? And me and Janelle walking around, and I said, you know, I used to say that I hate that my brother missed this, you know. And I told her, I said that to my first sponsor, who was Bill Finley. And I told Finley, I said, I hate that my brother missed this. And he looked at me and he said, do you hate that your brother missed that or that you missed it? Man, I hate the truth. I followed my brother everywhere he went. I was his shadow. My brother was my protector. I have always been afraid. Always. Always. Can't let you know it. I would run my mouth and get into a scrape, and then my brother would come clean it up, because I always knew he would. And after my brother was gone, I got to clean up my own scrapes. So that didn't make me afraid, but it seemed to intensify the fear. And so now, my mom and dad were devastated. My grandparents, it almost killed my grandparents. And, you know, I'm 13 and I'm trying to, I ain't talked to nobody about it. Everybody was having enough trouble dealing with this. And, so I start looking for stuff to make me not feel afraid. I was always an avid reader. I would escape into books, into TV, into somebody else, someplace else, doing something else. The kind of person that I wanted to be, the guy that wasn't afraid, the guy that, you know, was able to control situations around him. That's the guy I wanted to be. And I found great escape from the time I was a little boy, even when my brother was alive, in books and in TV and in movies and things like that. But now, you know, at 13, right, like, my mother said to me after my brother died, you know, Kenny, God has been really good to you. And one of these days, you know, you're going to really be a service to God and other people. And I looked at my mother and I said, I ain't got no desire to be a service to God, you or nobody else. If you want to know what I want out of life, I want mine. I want to get it my way, and I'm going to need you to leave me alone while I'm doing it. And my mother would get that sad look on her face. You know that look mothers get on their face when they find out one of their kids is crazy. And my mother would look at me, and she would say, Kenny, I don't know where you get this stuff, but we didn't raise you that way. And I used to tell my mother, if you don't believe my way is going to work, get out the way and watch me. And that's me at age 13. One of the gifts God did give me is I did well in school. That's a gift. School came easy for me. I could read before I went to school. School was easy for me. And I was a straight-A student with very little effort. And I was sitting in study hall in Sandusky High School. I was a freshman. And I'm looking out the window at the cars going up and down Hayes Avenue. And I'm watching people in study hall doing their homework, breaking their neck trying to get B's and C's, taking general math and science. I'm taking calculus, advanced English, third-year Latin, physics. I'm in the ninth grade, and I'm getting straight A's. And I sat there, and I thought to myself, you know, it just might be entirely possible that I know everything. Now, I had no evidence to support that fact, that thought as being true, I accepted it as a fact, left the room, and took action on it. I actually went home and told that to my mom and dad. And the only thing I could tell you about that is that my father was a master sergeant in the United States Army. He played football. He was a nose tackle and a fullback. My father was not a guy to goof around with. And when I made that statement, my father came up off that couch. And I made a split second decision not to stay there and see what he wanted. I broke for that screen door and got out of it and closed it, and I turned around, and my father pointed his finger at me, and he looked me dead in my eye, and he said, "Kenny, I'm going to tell you something, boy." He said, "You're going to have a hard life. Don't nobody know everything." And I stood on that porch, and I looked at my father, and I laughed at him. Significant day in my life. Because on that day, I closed the door. Everybody in my life became an idiot. My mother, my father, the preacher, the teacher, later on the police, the judges, the lawyer, the probation. If I don't know it, it ain't worth knowing, became my philosophy of life. I'm selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, and scared to death. And then it happened. I got in a car with a guy whose life I lived in my head. I don't live in the real world with the rest of y'all. And he had a snazzy car, pocket full of money, ran around with the kind of girls I ran away from. And he was the captain of the basketball team. I played basketball in high school. And it's my best friend's older brother. We all played at Sandusky High School in the mid-70s. And I got in the car with Johnny, and he said, "Hey, Coleman, you want to get something to drink?" Now, I have been warned about drinking. Alcoholism does not run in my family. It gallops, and we have been told we do not do alcohol well. Look at your Uncle Ed. Look at Junior. Look at Bobby. Cirrhosis wiped out half of my family. Problems with alcohol on both sides of my family. If Johnny had said to me that day, "Let's go rob the carryout," I guarantee you I would have done it. That's a little sense of self that I had. Those are the lengths I'm willing to go to, right, to be accepted by you. I was addicted to acceptance long before I picked up a drink of alcohol. I'm one of them chameleons. I got a personality for every group of people that I hang around. The guys I play ball with, the guy, people I go to school with, the people I go to church with, the people in the house. Whatever I need to be, do, and say to gain your approval, that's what it's all about. And I'll tell you something. One of the hardest jobs in the world is to keep them people apart. Right? Because everybody got a different story, right? And you don't want them comparing them. We went through the drive-thru. We bought 10 quarts of Slitz Malt Liquor Bull. For the youngsters in the room, the quart preceded the 40 ounce. It was 32 ounces of beer. We bought Slitz Malt Liquor Bull. Why? Because it was on sale. "More bang for your buck," the guy said. Dropped the convertible top on that beautiful Pontiac, cranked up the Parliament Funkadelic, and we rolled through the streets of Sandusky, and we drank that beer. And my life changed. I've heard a lot of descriptions of the effect produced by alcohol from podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous. The easiest thing that I can tell you is that I went from shy, insecure, and afraid to bold, confident, suave, debonair, and absolutely fearless in about 20 minutes. Went behind the Derrick Apartments where all the thugs hung out, right? And I ain't said 5 words in public in the last 3 years. They surrounded the convertible. I told Johnny, "Turn that music down. There's a few things I want to tell a few people who are present here this afternoon that I've been wanting to tell them for quite some time." I went around that circle of hoodlums, told each and every one of them what I thought of them and what they needed to do, in my opinion, to improve themselves. The reaction of the boys around the car, right? They leaning in the convertible, hugging me, says, "See, I told you, my boy Coleman loosening up. He's one of the fellas. He's drinking." Boom, man, the magic happened. Acceptance. And I connected the dot. When I drink, I change. And the way I see you changing, alcohol equals success. And buddy, you better believe I knew where it came from. Went over to them girl's house that he run around with. I ain't never been over there. Start talking to them. I'm telling you, magic. Right? And, you know, the rest of it is pretty much the rest of my drinking history. Drink trouble. I went in a blackout. I have no idea what went on the next 4 or 5 hours. According to eyewitnesses at the house, I came in, threw up a trail through the house, through the living room, through the kitchen, through the family room. My grandfather fell on the floor laughing. I went in the bathroom, hit everything but the toilet. The next thing I remember is my mom. You know how they do. Go ahead, clean up this mess. You know you've been drinking. It smells like a brewery out here. I staggered into the hallway in what later years would be my drinking uniform, my underwear. I got a hangover you can take out and look at. I'm dying. I go in the bathroom. I look in the mirror. She's still screaming in the hallway. Bloodshot eyes. I look in the mirror, and this is what I said, and y'all know what it is. Man, oh man, I cannot wait to do that again. Grounded for life is what was being discussed in the living room and how they intended to carry that sentence out. So I'm in the bathroom, and I decide to have a meeting with myself. I don't have a meeting with myself. I don't recommend it if you're new in here. I love to have a meeting with myself. I usually can figure out what's going on. I had a meeting with myself, and this is what I came up with. If you knew, please stay with me. Here's what I thought. Okay, Kent, you got drunk, you got sick, and you got grounded for life. All this is true. But the reason, Kent, that you got grounded for life is not because you got drunk. It is because you got sick. So what you got to do is learn how to drink without getting sick. Can anybody, the big book talks about put your hand on a hot stove. I'm going to put my hand back on the hot stove. Alcohol's an answer. It ain't a problem. You the problem. So I'm in this bathroom. You know, and I'm thinking. And I realized to this day that not drinking was never an option. It was never an option. And I was gone. I'm one of the people who goes off real quick. And I continued to do well in high school, and I played ball, and I crossed the line really, really quick, and stuff is starting to happen around the house. You start to hear things like, you're not the son we raised. I was 17, and I had a 1 o'clock curfew, and I was allowed to go to high school dances in Sandusky. And I put on a three-piece suit and a tie, and I drove to Toledo, Ohio, an hour away. This is in the wintertime. To go to the All Beautiful Shea nightclub. You know what they said on the radio? When I got there, that ain't what it was, but it didn't matter. I got a driver's license that says I'm 22 years old. I got that down in Columbus. Cost me $25. And at 1 a.m. when I'm supposed to be home, I was in the Shea nightclub drinking the gin and juice and dancing with a woman older than my mother. That's a true story. Now, I left Toledo about 2:30 in the morning. It was snowing. And I got a plan, because alcoholics always got a plan. I'm going to get home. I'm going to park. I'm going to sneak. I'm going to climb in the bedroom window, and nobody will know. They're asleep. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. Y'all know what happened, don't you? I came around the corner. Every light in the house is on. I'm thinking, why do these people go to bed? So I came in the front door, but I know the jig is up. And my mother is there, and it looked like somebody dumped a bucket of water over her head. She got tears just coming down her face. And my mother looked at me, and this is what she told me. She said, Kenny, as your parents, we owe you a roof over your head, food to eat, clothes on your back, and an education. And she said, we have fulfilled our duty. She said, but Kenny, I got something that you can't have. And she said, it's my peace of mind. She said, Kenny, you going to penitentiary or the cemetery? And I got news for you, buddy. I ain't going with you. I am done. Go. Do what you want. I'm done. And this is what I said to my mom. I broke you. I broke you. And I want you to know something, Mama. I'm a little disappointed you're such a spiritual giant, because it wasn't even that hard. And I walked away laughing. It's Ken at the age of 17. Off to college, and higher education. And my alcoholism exploded. I have no more parental interference. I had shakes when I was 19 years old. I got up and I couldn't fasten my shirt. And I had set up headquarters down to Boar's Head Inn. And I went down to Boar's Head and I told Tom, the bartender, who was kind of my sponsor, I said, I think I got Parkinson's. He looked at me and said, you're 19 years old, you got Parkinson's? He said, listen to me, son. He said, I'm going to tell you what you do. He said, when you get up in the morning, he said, I want you to drink two shots of old granddad. He said, I guarantee you that'll stop. So I got up the next morning shaking like a leaf. I'd get two shots of granddad. Actually, they were 50 milliliter beakers. I was too cheap to buy shot glasses. I stole them out of a lab. I took two 50 meter beaker shots of old granddad, and my hands stopped shaking. And you know what I said? That man is a genius. My first sponsor pointed out something to me. He said, do you notice in your life at that time you had coaches, parents, professors, advisors, all these people who loved you and were trying to help you, and all you said to them was, leave me alone, you don't understand, it's my life. But you never questioned a bartender. To those of you who are new, I have a question for you. Why is it that I always listen to the people who harm me? Why is that? I got out of school and I went to work a job. I had got in a union at Ford in the summertime. It's a long story, but they didn't lay me off at 89 days. With a college education, I went to work a job that I should have been everybody's boss in there. But my alcoholism has progressed to a point where I'm terrified of responsibility. I'm terrified of life, totally right. And so I got these excuses. We make good money, blah, 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 blah. And the truth of the matter was, is that the alcohol is calling the shots in my life. I'm not. And I'm going to get to the end of this thing here. I don't get into a lot. Listen, jail is not a requirement for recovery. But that is not my experience. If this here was a drink of alcohol, and I stood here and took a drink tonight, a cop would drop right out of that light and land in the middle of this floor. When I came in here, the old timers in Cleveland used to say, drink trouble. I'm like, I get that. I've been in a lot of trouble. I was convicted of driving under the influence of alcohol 7 times in the state of Ohio. Those are convictions. I can't tell you how many times they let me go. My mother's older brother was the mayor of Sandusky for 2 terms. My family is full of professional people. My family is full of politicians. My family is full of people who are known in religion. And I just, dude, and then there's me. And 1984, I had a heart attack and died as a direct result of the use of alcohol and some of his cousins. And when I came to, I was in the cardiac unit of the old Providence Hospital in Sandusky. My mother's crying. But see, I ain't hurting nobody. I already lost my oldest son. I can't lose another. Right? I ain't hurting nobody. And I laid there and I said, God, if you let me live, I will never, ever pick up another drink or anything else. And I'm telling you, I meant it as much as I mean it now. I will never, ever, if I live, I will never drink again. And I spent 48 hours in the cardiac unit. My heartbeat stabilized. The cardiologist said a medical miracle. I had died, and no significant damage to my heart. They put me in a regular hospital room, took me out the cardiac unit. Here's the thought that came to me. If you knew, stay with me. Whoo, that was close. But I'm all right now. They said I'm as good as new. The kid is back. My best friend came in the room. His name was Mark. Mark died of this disease on the railroad track. Ran out on the railroad track because he had dropped some crack and he got hit by a train. And I was 7 years sober. Mark came and Mark sat among y'all. And you know, Mark told me, he said, if I ever decide I want this, I know where to come. Okay, Mark ain't coming. And he walked into my room, a man who died of this disease. I told him, go get me something to drink. And he looked at me and he said, you out your mind. That's why you're in here. Even he knew that. And I told him, you're going to need me before I need you. Go get it. And he wouldn't got me two tall boys to slit my liquor bull. I chugged them and smashed the cans. I'm 2 hours out the cardiac unit. If I had the power to quit drinking on my own, I'd have never come to AA. Why should I? They cut me out of a car, corner of Columbus Avenue, Taylor Street. Once again, not a scratch. Now, one of the things I've been doing with my sponsees is we've been in meditation, not trying to force it, not trying to press it, just asking God, show us where you've been in our lives. And a lot of the things, it's not the big stuff, like, you know, I survived a car wreck and all this. When I went to college, I met the guy, and he became my best friend, who many, many years later, he's a doctor now, who put me in treatment. See, God's hand always been over my life, right? That's how I know that the God I serve ain't a performance God. He's a God of grace. And it's unmerited, it's undeserved. This stuff was going on when, if you heard the word God come out of my mouth, there was something profane behind it. At the end of my drinking, no baths, no showers, I got it delivered as distended about 7 inches every time I drank old granddad. And every time I take a drink, I cough all this white stuff up. My liver and my pancreas are ceasing to function. They will no longer metabolize the alcohol I'm drinking. What I'm coughing up is pure alcohol. I'm 32 years old and I'm dying of alcoholism. I fell out at work one night. I had a lung full of water. There was two ladies at work. They was quality inspectors. And they came down and they said, Kent, you gotta get some help. And I told them I don't need no help. And those ladies, they are still living today. And every now and then I run into them in the grocery store. I ran into one of them at Kohl's. And they just smile because they remember when. And I came out of the pump lounge. It was a Thursday night. Got in the car waiting for my brother. At this point, I do not have a car. I work at Ford Motor Company, and I do not have a car. It is possible. You're looking at the man that pulled it off. Mighty embarrassing to get out of a cab at a Ford plant, but you're looking at a guy that did it. I ain't have a driver's license either, but, you know, never stopped me from driving. And I got in the car, and I'm waiting for my brother, and I had what they call a moment of clarity or a moment of sanity. There was a man in Cleveland. His name was Six Pack Charlie Kitchen. Charlie Kitchen died last year. He was 61 years sober. Charlie Kitchen used to say that that's the moment when God paralyzes the liar in you long enough for you to see the truth. And what I had is I had a moment of clarity, and what I saw was this: Ken, if you don't stop drinking, you're going to die, and you better get some help because you can't do it by yourself, and you better do it now because you're running out of time. Out of nowhere. See, I'm a great believer in the power of prayer. I believe I was prayed up in here. I went home and I called my buddy Rich from college, who's a doctor now, and he answered the phone, and his wife at the time answered the phone, and this is what she said. She said, "Richard, it's Kent." And that's exactly how she said it. And Rich got on the phone, and I said, "Rich, it's your boy, man. I need some help." And this is what he said to me. He said, "Man, I've been waiting for this call for 7 or 8 years. Pack a bag. Stay by the phone. I got you. When I get a call from somebody needing help, you know what I tell them? Pack a bag. Stay by the phone. I got you. And for that, I am responsible." He arranged for me to go to treatment in Xenia, Ohio, about 2.5 hours away from Sandusky. It's down by Dayton, Ohio. It's about 3 hours almost. And my brother and his wife in the front seat. I'm in the back seat. I'm on my way to treatment. Now, I don't know too much about treatment, but I had figured out on my own that they wasn't serving no liquor down there. So I got a case of Genesee beer for the trip. I'm in the back. I got a case of Jenny's. I start chugging them. Y'all know what's coming, don't you? Here's the thought that came to me. You know, I just may have overreacted here. It ain't that bad. I'll start my comeback tomorrow, right? So I told my brother to turn the car around. Now, my father knew more about alcoholism than I gave him credit for. Because my father told my brother and his wife, "I give you $100, you don't bring that tramp back here." This is a true story. So I told my brother to turn the car around. My brother said, "You got $200. I said, "No, I ain't got $2. He said, "Then you go on to treatment." Because he was going back home and get that $100. We got to Richard's home, which is bigger than this hotel, and I ain't joking. And I had wet my britches and fell in the bushes, and him and Bobby pulled me out. It's a true story. And I show you that arrogance of the alcoholic. Richard put me in his Porsche to drive me from his house in Centerville to treatment in Xenia. And I'm sitting in the car. You know what my first thought was? "Kent, what the hell happened to your life, man? You got better grades than Richard." Do you understand what I'm saying? The resurgence. Dude, I'm like, damn, man. I ain't even got a car. Richard stopped at the gas station and bought me a quart of Miller High Life, the champagne. A bottle of beer. It was always my favorite. He said, "Always your favorite." And he drove me over to the hospital, and we got in the parking lot. He put that car in park, and he looked at me, and he got the biggest smile I ever seen on his face. And he said, "Go ahead, dog, finish that." And he said, "Don't ask me how I know him, man." He said, "That's the last drink you're ever going to take." That was the 17th of May, 1992. I've not had another drop of alcohol or anything stronger than an aspirin since that day. Oh, that's because AA works. That's because God AA in you. Left to my own devices, I'd have imploded years ago. And I woke up the next morning in detox. It was May 18th, 1992. That was to become my sobriety date. I didn't know what a sobriety date was. Didn't care. Never been to AA meeting. Didn't know nothing about AA. Didn't care nothing about AA. They told me, "You're going to AA." I said, "For what?" I was so drunk when I came in there, I couldn't even sign the paperwork for the insurance company. For what? I spent 35 days in a 28-day treatment program, and all 35 days on step one. At 28 days, they called the Ford plant in Sandusky and said, "We don't think Kent's ready to leave the hospital." You know what they said the HR said at the Ford plant? "We don't either." They kept me an extra week. The Ford plant in Sandusky actually wrote a check to cover another week because my insurance was cut off, and I had a dictator sponsor who insisted that I pay that back. I did it, but I didn't want to. And I came home and I started to play a game. It's called Don't Drink, Go to Meetings, and Don't Do Nothing Else. The last thing my counselor, who was an AA warrior, he was 15 years sober. He's now 45 years sober and retired and living in Florida. The last thing Jimmy said to me was, if you don't go to an AA meeting tonight, you're going to die. He said, you ain't the potential, you are the actual. And you better get an AA tonight and you better get some help. And I went to meetings, but I didn't do nothing else. If I put my arm through a window and I cut an artery in my arm, I start bleeding all over the house. I put a towel on my arm. I drive myself to the hospital. I run in the emergency room and sit down bleeding to death. Look at the doctor and go, no, thank you. I'll just sit here. And I bleed to death in the emergency room. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the emergency room. I've been watching people die of untreated alcoholism in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for the last 30 years. The treatment for the disease I suffer from is a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It is a home group, it is a sponsor, and it is service in Alcoholics Anonymous. 60 days, I went to 3 meetings a day, 4 or 5 on the weekends. I'm living in my mom and daddy's house, helping my dad take care of my mother who is now dying of cancer. I'm going to all these AA meetings. 60 days sober, I pick up a T-bar at work and try to kill a supervisor. That's what I look like. No drinks, don't drink and go to meetings. That's what I look like. Days. I'm sitting in the parking lot of Daly's Pub in downtown Sandusky, vibrating. I want to drink so bad. And I'm thinking to myself, what am I, some kind of freak? I go to 3 or 4 of these meetings every day, and I've never wanted to drink or kill somebody so much in my life. I was so angry. And I'm going to tell you about y'all, because y'all recognized it. You know, people say, well, they told me to sit down and shut up. If you would have told me that at an AA meeting, I'd have tried to kill you. And they knew it, because I was scared to death. Full of anger and resentment, and I was spontaneously and explosively violent. And all they did was hug me and say, come back tomorrow, man. Come back tomorrow. Sit with me. Come back tomorrow. Nobody challenged me. I said my first prayer in that car. All in meetings, all in I ain't said a prayer, man. God, what am I doing wrong? That was my prayer. Immediately, I got an answer. What are you doing right? If you go to that many meetings, you hear it every day, don't you? Get a sponsor. Read the book. Work the steps. Get a home group. Help others, right? I treated A like I do none of that. I treated A like a cigarette-smoking, donut-dunking coffee clutch. Last one at the meeting, first one out the door. And I turned the key in that car and I drove to Lorain, Ohio, and I went looking for a man who, there was a man in my home group, John C. John got sober in 1945. And John said, there's a man in Lorain, Ohio, and he specializes in guys like you. And I went looking for Bill Finley, a guy who went around the world doing big book, and I ain't know all that. Still to this day, the best speaker I've ever heard. Bill was a trip, man. And some people in here wouldn't know who he was, but I went looking for his home group with 700 people in the gymnasium on Thursday night. It was called the Compass Group. And there was another guy he ran around with, Ken B. And Janelle knew Kenny. And I said, the first one of them I see, I'm going to ask to help me. I walked in the side door of that gymnasium, and the two of them were sitting together looking at me, laughing as I'm walking in the door. And I just walked up to him and I said, would you help me? And they said yes. And I ended up with Bill and Kenny. And I also ended up with their sponsor, who was Neil C. in Cleveland. And Neil's sponsor was Bob Smith, who was a doctor in Akron, who was a co-founder of AA. And that's how I was given Alcoholics Anonymous. I was given it straight out the book, clearly, simply. What a blessing they were in my life. Bill died 52 years sober. Kenny was 49. Kenny just died a couple years ago. And Neil, my grand sponsor, lived with Dr. Bob and Ann for 18 months. And Neil died. He was 59 years sober. And these were the people who helped me. And I sat in Cleveland at Thursday, West Side Thursday, with the guys from 41, 42, 43 that were still alive. And they used to ask me stuff like, Did you pray this morning? Did you give a good day's work today? Nobody asked me about page 86 and 87. They asked me none of that. They wanted to know if I was taking the things that I was being taught and if I was applying them. That's what they wanted to know. And they took me through the steps of the program as I try to live them in my life today. Since I've been here, like, my parents died, my mom died, I was 2.5 years sober, I made amends to my mother, I talked about that earlier today. And my mother said, promise me you'll stay with those people, they were the answer to our prayer, they were able to do for you what we could not. And I promised my mother that I would, and I have. My dad, I was 18 years sober when my dad died. I got two daughters, and they loved my daddy, oh my God. And he loved them so much. My mother never saw those girls. And granddaddy. My oldest daughter, Alyssa, said to me, is granddaddy your daddy? I said, no, he is not. I said, that man is not the same man that lived in my house, right? They could go in his house and set it on fire, and he'd just sit there and go, oh, ain't that cute? And we had a wonderful time with my dad, and life has been good. I have stayed. My first sponsor told me, bury yourself knee deep. He said, nah, change that, Ken. He said, bury yourself shoulder deep in this thing called AA so you can't teeter and fall. And I've been shoulder deep in AA from that day to this day. I work intensively with other alcoholics. I sponsor a lot of people. If you ask me how many, I will not tell you. Because there are people in here who will look at that number and think to themselves, wow, I must not be doing good. Let me tell you what the most important number is in here. Alan, our speaker, said it this morning. The person, most important number in here is one. If in my lifetime, God is able to work through me to help one human being, how far do the ripples go? Families change, employers change, communities change. Right? How far do the ripples go? I started sponsoring people. And my home group, I'm going to say this real quick, but my home group, they gave me the coffee commitment. Big meeting. Okay, 400 cuppers at this bad boy. And here's the keys to the coffee locker. Be here next week at 6:30 for this 8:30 meeting. You make the coffee, set up the tables and chairs. I said, how long am I have to do that? They looked at me and said, we'll get back to you. 3 years later, I was still doing it. But there was a problem. There was a problem with my coffee commitment. I don't know how to make coffee. But do I tell you that I don't? No, because I'm new. I'm all front and no back. What I think you think of me is the most important thing in the world. And I can't have you think that I don't know. Anybody in here relate to that? I can't have you think I don't know. So for 1 week, I do not sleep. Coffee, coffee, coffee. I'm at work. And I'm picturing people drinking the coffee and dying at the meeting. So finally, Friday night comes. I get down to Venice. There's four guys in that group from the mid-40s. And they're all four there. I'm thinking, they don't trust me. No kidding. So I set up the tables and chairs. I get out the coffee pots. I put the water in them. There's a line and a number 100 in there. I went to college. I figured that out. And now, the moment of truth, I got the coffee basket in my hand. Old Herb B is sitting at the end of the table. He said, Kent, come here. So I walked over to Herb. I got the coffee basket in my hand. I said, yes, Herb. He looked at me and he said, I don't know about you, but when I make 100 cupper, I like to put the coffee right to about that line right there in the basket. He said, how do you do it? I said, I do it just like that, Herb. Are you following me? They knew I didn't know. They also knew that I wasn't going to tell them because I was new. I want you to remember that. never made me feel less than, never made me feel wrong, never made me feel a part of, never made me feel stupid, man. That's love. And that's what we have here. Right? So I gotta ask myself, am I that kind of guy? Am I that kind of sponsor? Am I that kind of group? Am I that kind of guy? Because that's what they left me with. My girls are grown now. My oldest daughter is married. I got a grandbaby, Caroline. She just turned one. Granddaddy baby. Cries like crazy if I get 5 feet from her. Granddaddy baby. She looks just like my mama. Right? Me and Janelle, we just have a blast. We just have a great time. Our mantra is we do what we want, right? And how fun. I live where I want. I live with who I want to live with. I get to go. I went back to school when I was at Ford to get an advanced degree because Ford looked like they might go under, and somebody said it'll look good on your resume. And a guy walked by me one day and he said, "Would you come see me?" It was a manager. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm working on a degree." He said, "I need a supervisor for 3 months, summer, cover vacations." He said, "Look good on your resume." And so I took it. After 1 month, they called me up front, called me in my office, said, "Come up front to personnel." And I'm like, "Okay." And you know what I'm thinking, don't you? Well, I blew it. Right? Because that's the way I think. And I got up there, and there's a plant manager and salary personnel. And salary personnel manager's name was Gary. And Gary looked at me, and he said, "Kent, you've been doing this for a month, but it seems to us like you've been doing this all your life. Forget the three-month thing. We want you to take this permanently." And he put a piece of paper in front of me, and he said, "That's what we'll pay you." And I looked at that paper, and I said, "Give me a pen." And I was a supervisor and I scheduled production, and then they sent me to Ohio Assembly and I became the paint coordinator for the E-Series vans worldwide. And then they sent me to Dearborn and I became material control advisor for service part distribution in North America. It was a guy at a meeting in Dearborn, and we were redesigning the Mustang at that time, and I was working in fuel emission systems. And this guy, I'm in the room with this engineer, big shot Ford engineer. And he looks at me, it's just me and him in the room, and he said, "I could ask you a question, Coleman." He said, "But man, where did you come from?" He said, "It seemed like you just came out of nowhere." And I looked at him, and I said, "I did." And he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, "Well, we're glad you did. And you know where I came from? It's from y'all. From God and Alcoholics Anonymous." Right? And so if you're new here tonight, I want to leave you with something simple. Trust God, clean house, help others. It really, really is just that simple. If I said anything that helped anybody tonight, thank God. Do not thank me. And if I didn't say nothing to help you tonight, come hear Brian in the morning. God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. God could and would, if he were sought, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Good night.